What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap. We're here on Thursday, early rip for us. Matthew is traveling the southern part of the United States. So we're going to
road
rip a little...
trip.
How's your road trip been? What's the South like these days?
It's fucking gorgeous, man. It's the South is alive and well.
Yes, it is. How many guns have you seen so far?
No, I mean, I haven't. It's not like, yeah, in the South, people just like, you know, they would just walk around with their guns all over the place. You just walk into the Starbucks, they got guns. I'm kidding, freaks. I would never go to Starbucks. I fucking love traveling, right? And it seems like international travel is at least going to be a pain in the ass for a little bit longer, at least. So it seems good a time as ever to get the road tripping in. And first time in South Carolina.
Ooh.
First time in Georgia. Georgia, Savannah's fucking dope as fuck. I've never been to Savannah before. It is a really underrated city.
Yes, that's what we were talking about before we hit record. Open container laws don't exist there. You can walk around.
Rollins gets all the credit. No one ever talks about that in Savannah. Are there other cities that have open container laws? Or don't have open container laws, I guess?
I would imagine there are.
I don't know. Shout it out, freaks. If you know a city where you can walk down the street drinking a beer, ideally looking at water. I like looking at water while I'm drinking the beer.
Yeah.
The breeze in my hair. But open container in general is a huge plus.
Another little known fact about Savannah. I don't think it's number one. I said it was number one St. Paddy's Day celebration, but now thinking in my mind, I think Chicago may have that mantle, but Savannah's definitely top two or three St. Patrick's Day celebrations in the country, which is interesting considering it's in Georgia. Where'd you stop in South Carolina?
In South Carolina, we stopped in Columbia.
Ooh. Oh, so you ripped it through the middle of the state.
Yeah, because we were in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Greensboro. I'm like,
there's something.
Be careful with the cities I say. I have friends in places where I'm going to meet friends and stuff.
Yeah.
This was like my first time in all these states. I had never been in like the Southeast besides like Florida and Texas is south, just completely south, right? Yeah, I guess this country is so fucking huge. People just don't really appreciate how big it is.
It's massive. That's actually...
I could spend decades just driving around this country and not see the same thing over again.
It really hit me in high school. I was doing a driver's ed class. You got to take driver's ed classes here. Not actually in the car, but like a class where you learn about the road and best practices to get your insurance down. And the driver's ed teacher who came and taught us that class... really drove it home. The fact that you could drive for like 3 days in Europe and cross like 20 countries or something like that. And here, you can barely get like coast to coast in this one country. America's vast. It's beautiful.
That'd be a pretty intense 3 day coast to coast drive.
Right? No, exactly. Americans take for granted how big and beautiful this country is. Go see it if you're an American.
Also, like Airbnbs and hotels right now are cheap as fuck, guys. Really fucking cheap.
Right. I'm actually looking. I'm looking to hit wine country in January, and things are very cheap right now. Hoping that we can make that happen.
I think we might just get rid of the apartment and just do like 4 or 5 months of road tripping and just like stay at Airbnbs for 3 weeks here, 3 weeks there.
It's not a bad idea. We're just getting
cheaper than New York City.
Just get an RV. Stay in the RV.
I don't know about the RV idea. I'm like, I go back and forth.
Why? Is it too daunting to handle or?
It's like, first of all, it's definitely more annoying to drive, right?
Yes.
I think there's two types of people. I think there's people that usually go over the speed limit, and then there's people that are always dutifully 5 miles an hour below the speed limit. I'm not going to say specifically which category I'm in.
I'm in the former. I'm always 15 to 20 miles
above
the speed
limit. I think an RV for extended periods of time could be annoying to that type of person. And then the other thing is I hear like there's like a lot of maintenance, like a lot of maintenance headaches can come up. You gotta.
Yeah, the septic tank alone is something I'd probably want to stay away from.
I have friends, this couple, who right at the beginning of Rona realized like what the fuck was going on, and they got out of their Seattle lease and they bought an RV and they've just been driving around working remote from the RV. Which I thought was pretty badass, but then like week three, like in the middle of the workday, just their toilet started overflowing into the RV. Like their home and their car is like all in the same place, just filled with fucking sewage. At least it was their own.
So yeah, at least it was their own
for them. But yeah, I think with Airbnb so cheap, might as well just go Airbnb to Airbnb.
I like that move. I do. I am getting a little stir crazy myself. I haven't been. We went home to Philadelphia for a couple days this week. That was a nice little reprieve. Really disgruntled. Like a lot of people walking outside by themselves with masks. Philadelphians, come on.
It's weird. The outside thing is weird.
It's very weird. It's a virtue signal. But speaking of signals,
I don't know if it's a virtue signal. I think for most people, it's not. I think it's just a fear thing.
It is a fear thing. All right. And so if you are out there and you're fearful, some stats came out earlier today. I don't know if this is globally or just here in the U.S. I'm going to read them out loud. This comes from Dr. David Samadi, MD, at Dr. David Samadi, S-A-M-A-D-I, on Twitter. New COVID-19 survival rates per the CDC. So this is probably the United States only. Age range is 0 to 19. You're going to have a 99.997% survival rate. Ages 20 to 49, you're going to have a 99.98 survival rate. Ages 50 to 69, you're going to have a 99.5 survival rate. And if you're 70 or over, your survival rate is going to be 94.6%, which is, if you're 70 or over, that's a 3.4% chance of death, or excuse me, 5.4% chance of death is nothing to scoff at. But I think for the younger ages, 70 and under, survival rate is 99.5% and above. So should we be fearful? I don't know. This is amazing news, but people may look at this.
We don't know. Is that, that's only if you get it, right? So it's even less likely.
Yes, I guess that's only if you get it and test positive. So there's.
Right, because if you only have like a 1% chance of getting it in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so...
Is that factoring that in already? Probably not.
It's survival rate, so you have to have had it first in the first place.
Yeah, there you go.
Take that data as you wish. Decide to be fearful or not. I personally am not as afraid of this as I was when it first came. But this isn't a COVID podcast. This is a Bitcoin podcast. And the price of Bitcoin right now, according to Clark Moody's dashboard, is $10,650. If you're buying a dollar's worth of sats, you're going to get 9,390 sats. Bitcoin's market cap still hovering around $200 billion, slightly under it at $196.9 billion. You're going to get 5.7 ounces of gold per Bitcoin. Thank you for fixing the percentage there, Clark. That's 1.64% of the total gold market cap, and you're going to get 261 barrels of oil with one Bitcoin right now. Right now we're at block height 649,811. We had a difficulty adjustment since our last episode, and it was a pretty significant one. We have a difficulty all-time high, 19.3 trillion. I believe it's trillion. Actually, it could be a lot higher. I just have trillion in my mind for some reason. We're at difficulty epoch 323, I forget what it's called. It's the same backwards and forwards. And so the last difficulty adjustment was over the weekend. It was 11.3% upwards. Blocks were coming in around 9 minutes and 18 seconds during the last epoch. Currently, we are scheduled to have another retarget on October 3rd. So that is 9 days from now. Right now, it's estimated to be a downward difficulty adjustment of 1.3%, and blocks are currently coming in around 10 minutes and 10 seconds. Obviously, we are not too far into this difficulty epoch, so that is subject to change. We will keep you freaks updated, obviously. Fees we're looking at pretty low. Still getting that one set fee in. Actually, they have raised since last week. If you're ready to, if you need to get your transaction confirmed, the next block, you should be sending a transaction with a 75 sat per byte fee. If you're willing to wait an hour, it drops down to 62 sats per byte. If you're willing to wait a day, that drops all the way down to 2 sats per byte. Last week, it was 1 sat per byte. So
the last time we're ever going to see 1 sat per byte.
That time preference is rising. And yeah, if you're willing to wait a week, you can get it in for 1 sat per byte.
Until you won't be able to.
Yes. We had a material increase in the unspent capacity. Samurai last week, 1,633.04 Bitcoin. I believe we were at around 1,500 last.
First time we broke 1,600. We were at 1,500 on September 10th. I like calling it, we're calling it liquidity pool now. That's what all the kids like.
Okay, the liquidity pool has increased. There's been 9,769 cycles in the last 30 days. right now, 20.7% of all Bitcoin nodes that are reachable are version 0.20.0. Version 0.20.1 is catching up at 15.8%. And then behind that, we have version 19.1, version 0.19.1, version 0.18.1, and version 0.18.0, rounding that out.
We see those updates happening more frequently now that people... Now there's more people running these like node packages on these single board computers like the Raspis and stuff.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Because I feel like the updating is easier.
Right.
So it's like more, I don't know, they're updating other things, so they update Bitcoin at the same time.
Yeah, it's less manual too.
Yeah, which could be a good or a bad thing.
Yeah, depending on your risk appetite for your node software. So that's the stats. Any other stats you want to look at today? Anything interesting? I'm going to look around.
I guess from like the thought of if you're running it that way, you're less likely to be actually keeping your keys hot. You're just using Bitcoin Core or Bitcoin D as a way to look up your balances on your hardware wallet or something. Then updating it isn't as, you know, updating it frequently isn't as much of a risk because you're not worried about coin loss or not worried nearly as much about coin loss.
No. But at some point, you're going to have to move those.
But you understand what I'm saying? Like, if you're storing your Bitcoin hot in Bitcoin Core, and every time you update, it could be a possibility that you lose your coins. Like, you actually get them stolen from you. But if you're just using Bitcoin, you know, if you're just using Bitcoin D or Bitcoin Core to look up your balances and not actually store your keys... then, you know, maybe you have like some kind of consensus bug or failure or something, but you don't actually lose your funds.
Yeah, if you're using it as a watch only, that makes a lot of sense.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, so be aware, freaks. This episode of Rabbit Hole Recap is brought to you by good friends, the motherfucking Cash App. They're helping you stack sats, send sats, receive sats, and sell sats. If you so please, we're saying sats, because sats are the standard, all right? We're not buying fractions of bitcoins. We're stacking whole sats. On top of this, you can stack slivers of stonks if you so please. Stonk market been getting crushed. If you're looking to buy that dip, not personally, you can. And again, if you're buying the dip, you don't have to stack a whole stonk. You can buy a sliver of a stonk, as little as $1, because all this is connected to your bank account. There's no 4 to 5 day waiting periods. You can start stacking sats today or slivers of stonks if you so please. Cash App Investing is a subsidiary of Square, member SIPC. As always, make sure you use the code stacking sats. That's STACKINGSSATS. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. That's Owls Lacrosse. My dad taught me this week. Woo hoo! Woo! Woo hoo! Woo! And Marty's Owl made me aware that that's what horny owls say. So there's a horny owl on my block. Download the Cash App, use the code STACKINGSATS, and then go check out our good friends at Unchained Capital. Huge announcement this week. Unchained Capital is creating financial services for Bitcoiners with a security-first mindset. They're trying to stay true to Bitcoin's ethos, and this was not in the ad read, but I'm adding it to the ad read this week. They released a business application for businesses who want to engage in multi-sig custody with Unchained and have granular control over who has access to keys, who can construct transactions, who can broadcast transactions, who can sign transactions, who can see balances in wallets. So if you're a business who's looking to take self-custody of their Bitcoin and do that in a multi-sig fashion, Unchained is building out a business tool suite for you. Very cool. On top of that, they have their concierge service, their white glove concierge service. If you're out there and you want to go from zero to multi-sig, Unchained has a $1,500 package. If you guys use the code TFTC, if you tell them we sent you, you're going to get $50 off. $1,500 package includes $1,450 for you freaks. Includes one-on-one Skype calls to go over what multi-sig is, to teach you how to use it, to answer any questions you may have. They're going to send you hardware wallets if you need them. And then on top of that, they're going to put $1,000 into your vault once you set that up. Again, they're going to have multiple calls with you. They're going to get you as comfortable as possible and as you need to be before you set up your vault. They're going to help you set it up. They're going to send you the hardware wallets. They're really going to walk you through this. So go check them out at www.unchained-capital.com. That's www.unchained-capital.com. We'll put a link in the show notes to the concierge white glove service. And on top of that, they have an OTC desk that is adding more states by the week. Tiki!
Does that say Skype in the ad read?
I didn't say... No, I mean, I don't think it says Skype.
They don't use Skype.
No, they don't use Skype. It's a video conference. I think it might be proprietary, actually.
No, I think... Don't they use Google Meet?
They may. I don't know for sure.
I don't I have the... triggered by Skype. Who uses Skype now?
Skype's like a verb for me.
Yeah, that's what I figured. And then the other thing is that advanced multi-sig for business, we actually have that in the list. I don't know if you realized.
Mm-hmm. I do.
That's, you know, I think that's a big deal. Like, this is, they're going for, and... I guess, I mean, we're just like continuing it here from the ad read, but disclosure, they're a sponsor of the podcast. I think this was a big deal to begin with, regardless of the ad read. They're basically targeting like the Michael Saylors of the world, right? Instead of, so last week we mentioned, or I maybe alluded to the fact that I thought that maybe they'd be self-custodying based on the way he spoke about it on Twitter. They are not self-custodying. They are keeping with a major custodian. I can't say the name, but they are keeping with a major custodian. It has come to my attention. So this idea is basically a way to try and appeal to those types of companies. Instead of them using a custodian, maybe they'll come and do multi-sig where Unchained maybe holds a key, maybe another institution also holds a key, maybe neither of them holds a key, but like they have this whole setup process for you.
Yeah, and it was funny that they dropped this product this week, considering the conversation that ensued in that thread where you corrected yourselves about their custody. It was a really good conversation. Who was part of that? Rodolfo, Parker, Phil Geiger, Justin Moon, Jeff Vandrew hopped in and just discussing the trade-offs of
A great thread.
Yeah, of self-custody for corporate entities. And it's interesting. Publicly traded companies with big boards and more decision makers along the hierarchy, I guess you could say. It may be a little bit more difficult for them, but small businesses that own and don't have own their whole operations and their own stack and don't have to answer to any boards may have it better off and an easier way to self-custody.
I mean, absolutely. It's definitely more difficult in a public company environment.
Yeah. But no, like I think Rodolfo and Jeff Vandrew specifically highlighted some pain points for the publicly traded companies, particularly like, can you trust the employees? How will you ever get past the board? You need to get the risk of the Bitcoin custody outside of your company because it's maybe too risky like of an activity. You need to focus on your core competency as a business.
I think, I forget who it was, but someone was like, rather than protect the keys, you just want someone to sue.
Yes.
But I think it's a little bit different in the Bitcoin land because it's so hard to get real insurance. Like we see like the Prime Trusts of the world and the Coinbases of the world and the Geminis, they get like some kind of insurance.
It's like 1% of their hot wallets or something like that.
Yeah, it's got so much fine print there. And like insurance companies, like they're just known to just fuck you at every fucking turn, even in like non-Bitcoin kind of things. So it's really just a veiled protect. Like it gives you like some kind of plausible deniability that it wasn't your fault that Bitcoin gets lost. But if one of these major custodians has like some kind of major hack or bug and a serious amount of coin loss, like they're going out of business and you're not going to, I don't think you're going to get that much if you sue them. Like, I don't know what you're going to get pennies.
Yeah. And Parker highlighted in that thread, counterparty risk exists. It was proven out with AIG. It depends on your risk appetite, your state of, is comfortability a word? Your comfort with holding it with another custodian. Like, is if they just up and run away with your Bitcoin, are you gonna be okay with that? And obviously, you have to be
$400 million worth of Bitcoin, man.
Right. I think that's what you said. Like, is that, do you want to trust that with somebody else? $400 million.
Right. Someone was like, would you trust yourself with $400 million worth of keys for Bitcoin? And I was like, would you trust someone else with $400 million worth of your Bitcoin? No.
Especially if that $400 million can turn into $4 billion pretty quickly here.
Yeah, especially if that's the fucking thesis.
Right.
It's one thing if your thesis is like, oh, it's just going to be stable and it's not going to go up.
Yeah. Trade-offs. And hey, this is some uncharted territory that Bitcoin is venturing into. And these conversations need to begin to happen. And it'll be interesting to see who pioneers these corporate structure key custody practices. So we have Unchained Capital, obviously. Another person who hopped in that thread actually with some very good points was our friend Thib from Knox Custody. They do similar stuff for companies via Knox Custody. They will help set up multi-sig and be a key signer in those quorums as well too. These service providers are coming to market. It'll be interesting to see how
popular
they become.
The other thing is, like, you can do a multi-sig. Sorry for cutting you off, Marty.
You're good.
You can do a multi-sig where the providers have more keys than you, you know, where like Unchained Capital or Knox or like a combination of a bunch of institutions, let's say like four, like let's say that it's a 5-key setup and 4 of the keys are held by outside institutions and you'll hold 1 key. Like at least you have more audibility, right? Like, you know the funds aren't being rehypothecated. You know they're actually there. That they're. It's a nice proof of funds, proof of custody.
Yeah, that was another thing that was brought up in that thread, like giving keys to multiple institutions. Which still to me, I'm dumb. I'm like trying to figure out how and why that would work, and how you'd be able to trust everybody in that quorum.
You don't have to. That's the beauty of it. You just have to trust that like 3 or 5 of them don't fuck you.
Yeah.
It's still superior, obviously, from a trust model than if you just have a single custodian. And it's only possible because of Bitcoin. And you can put each of those key signers can be in like different jurisdictions. You know, you can have like a Singaporean bank, you can have a German bank, you can have a US bank, you know, you can have some like lawyer in the Caymans, and then like you control a key.
I like that. See, that
you can do like crazy fucking shit.
Right. Ooh, it's exciting. On the cutting edge here. I think this subject is going to be more and more prominent as companies like MicroStrategy, Snap, Tahini. Tahini. What's the name of that company?
It's Tahini's, right?
Tahini's, yeah.
I think they listen to the show. Shout out to Tahini's.
Tahini's restaurant in Ontario.
Next time I'm in Ontario, I'm gonna definitely go try it. I love me some gyro and some falafel.
I'm a sucker for the chicken shawarma.
Yeah, shawarma, huge fan. The other thing with Unchained is you can even go crazier because they have their shamirs set up too. So then you could take one of those keys and you could shamir the fuck out of it. And you can basically make it so you need a threshold to activate that single key in the first place. Yeah. So like, if you're listening and you're running like a major business that's considering, you know, allocating a portion of, to Bitcoin, I'm not saying to Michael Saylor like he should put his whole $400 million in, you know, but these are things you should explore and at least maybe consider it for his personal stash. I assume the guy bought some before he bought it with his company. But you know, this is something you dip your toes in, you get used to, but it seems strictly superior to me in the long term.
Yeah. What is the strategy for $425 million custody? Do you break it up in multiple different HD wallets? How many UTXOs do you break that up into? Like, how many private keys do you break that into?
You do like one UTXO per wallet, first of all, because
obviously
there's no privacy. No, you're not. The privacy isn't a goal. It's a publicly traded company, right? So you're gonna have to. Everything's gonna have to be disclosed and super on the up and up, anyway. But yeah, you split it up based on your risk profile, right? But I mean, I would split it up into at least like $100 million chunks. It just feels good, right? Like, why a hard asset to insure that's like pretty nascent? Like, why? I mean, you got to realize there's not. How many different methods of storing it do you trust, right? But you can set it up into, you know, three or four different wallets in that are all secured in slightly different ways so that you're not all in one basket. Right now, the single custodian, something happens to them. I mean, and I'm saying this partially from a greed point of view because if Marty loses his keys, like, you know, like Bitcoin is completely fine. No one's gonna care. Me or Marty lose our keys. Like no one's gonna care. Everyone's Bitcoin becomes slightly more valuable. But there's like a couple custodians that no one talks about that they do like they're doing the wallets for like all the major exchanges and like all the major players. And if something happens there, like Bitcoin will be fine long term. And especially if the funds are lost forever, then yeah, like all of our Bitcoin becomes worth some more. But it's going to be turbulent times. Like a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money, and it's going to be fucking chaos. If there's like a couple you could hit, that it would just be, it would be pretty bad.
Considerably worse than Gox, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Gox was such a big part, though, right? Gox was the exchange.
Well,
so maybe not.
Well, the custodians that you're. Referring to are a big part just under the radar behind the scenes. It would be more apparent of how integral they are to the exchange infrastructure. But know the risk, know the trade-offs, know the optionality that you have, freaks, especially if you're running a business, and explore this. That's the beauty of Bitcoin. There's so much to be built out, so much to experiment with, and so many ways in which this can go. It's just like infinitely fascinating to play out the game theory like we did just there. Let's get to shout outs. Matt, I'm sorry about this first shout out. Love you, Marty. You're the best. This is only for you. Fuck you, Matt. I don't know who wrote that.
Love you, freak.
Anonymous.
Appreciate you.
I love you, Matt. Marty and Matt.
They're trying to cause strife between us.
Yes, that's what I warned Matt before. Somebody tried to divide us. We will not be divided, freaks, no matter how hard you fucking try. Second and last shout out of the week, a good one. Marty and Matt, y'all don't know me, but you should know this. I will not eat bugs. I will not live in a pod. I will not follow to Spotify. Here's $50 to ensure I'm not tempted. Thanks for your work. And as long as I have the mic, dear freaks, few of you know me, but let's divine collaborativism. I've been like working on this and I fucked it up. Collaborativism. Type it out. collaborativism. Notice the red underline? If collaboration is working together, especially in a joint intellectual effort, then collaborativism is a model by which sufficiently well-coordinated entities behaving self-interestedly work towards a particular goal. It's neither collectivism or communism. It's depolarizing. It's a single memorable word. It's not hard to say, though. This is my input. A meme brought into this world competing for survival. If you like it, spread it. Tell your friends. Bitcoin is our means. Collaborativism is our model. The goals are peace, love, unity, and respect. Use Bitcoin. Obviate the state. Let's fucking go. Kiss face up. This is from real at real fake Bitcoin. P.S. It's a cult. Hail Eris. Collaborativism.
I think I love you, freak, but I promise you, we're never gonna go Spotify exclusive. But I don't think that collaborativism is ever gonna stick. It's too hard to say.
It's very hard to say.
Did I just say it right?
I think so. I don't know. Collaborativism.
Never gonna stick. It needs to be easy to say.
Yes, and you're talking to a meme master across from me right now. Yes, and I can assure you, we're not gonna go to Spotify. They've already tried to coax us over.
You should see the deal they offered us. It was massive.
Yeah, we left a lot of money on the table for you freaks, but
like 25 million Bitcoin. They were gonna give us more than the existing supply of Bitcoin.
Yeah, they were just getting into the Bitcoin space.
Take that, Joe.
Joe doesn't even know what he's missing out on in the Bitcoin payouts. No, but with that being said, I think only like 5% of you freaks listen via Spotify. I think 50% listen via Android devices and Android apps. I know you can get Spotify on Android devices, Android specific apps. We would not leave you in the dust, and we would not expect you to follow either if we went to Spotify.
It is known.
Thank you for listening. If you are here, no matter what.
Oh, and the person who did the Jack Mahler's shout out hasn't reached out yet, for what it's worth.
He has not.
Not saying who if you're the freak, you don't have to dox yourself to us. You know, you can do it through some private medium if you want. You can hit us on Keybase or something like that. Or like create a fake Twitter and hit us that way.
Yeah. Or a fake email address. Yeah. Marty's@gmail.com.
There you go. Sign him up for all the newsletters.
Please don't. Please don't. Please. why'd you incept that idea?
I don't know. You blasted the email address. That's what happened.
American Hoddle's gonna be blasting me on porn fucking newsletters now. Please don't. I don't want to say controversial, but this sparked
sign
some
Sign him up for all the ETH newsletters.
Oh,
get
God.
Him his DeFi news.
God damn it.
Sorry.
This caused some conversation earlier this week. Yost Jager. I hope I'm pronouncing his Jost Jager. Is probably how you pronounce it, from the Netherlands. He left Lightning Labs earlier this week, and then announced a project that he's working on, firewall circuit breaker for Lightning nodes, and basically he highlighted a griefing attack that is possible, where you basically sent 43 transactions can lock up the HTLCs.
It's basically a DDoS. It's a denial of service, but with Lightning, you just send like a lot of small payments, right? But you like hold them, right? And you don't actually send them through.
Yeah, you basically stuff up the HTLCs in some way. So you take many routes to the same end node and sort of lock the node up and the funds. They can't steal the funds, but they can make it so you can't send them for an extended period of time. But it seems that that's what I liked about his thread. Is, well, before we get to his thread, number one,
you're sending them to yourself, right? You control nodes on both sides of the node you're attacking, and you send the payment to yourself by doing like an invoice, but you never actually fucking send the payment, so it doesn't even cost you any fees to do the attack.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a griefing attack at DDoS. It's been well known. among the Lightning community for a while, and there have been solutions proposed, and Jost is proposing Circuit Breaker, which basically allows you to set a limit on the amount of HDLCs that can be in route at any given point in time. And again, it's not 43, it's 483 HDLCs. The current maximum HDLC slots is 483, so they can theoretically an attacker could clog those up and prevent you from sending funds. Circuit Breaker would limit the amount of in-route HTLCs at any given point in time, so it mitigates that risk. So
it's 483 HTLCs, but because there can be up to...
Because you can split up your payments, right?
Because you can just keep adding hops, you might only be able... You might only require 54 payments to do it.
Yes, because it gets split up into...
The point is the attack is very cheap to do and easy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And the idea is you would hit, I guess, large routing nodes. For either two reasons, I guess three reasons. Either because you hate Bitcoin and you just want to like piss people off. The second reason is if you're competing with another routing node for fees, right? Let's say you're LN big and you're making a lot of fees and you knock Bit Refill off. So then the actual payments come to you and you take the fees. I don't think Lightning fees are that high enough really for that to be a thing, but it could be presumably in the future. And then maybe surveillance. Like if you're trying to surveil a particular node, then maybe cutting off certain, you get kind of can choose where the route goes. If you cut off certain nodes from them.
Yeah. And another way this attack could be mitigated is private channels opened up between counterparties that you trust.
Well, because they can't use private channels. Strangers can't use private channels.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So be aware. It was interesting. If you are interested in the Lightning Network and make it more robust and less susceptible to these types of attacks, Jost has... started a GitHub page, github.com/lightningequipment/circuitbreaker. Obviously, we will link to that in the show notes. If you're a developer working on Lightning, interested in this, why don't you give it some review, feedback, whatever you think is necessary in this context. I am too dumb to offer any of those.
One of the interesting things here is... And correct me if I'm wrong in the tweets, freaks... But I think this is on a per channel basis. So it actually could be a negative of having big ass Wumbo channels. Right? Like if you have,
that's what he calls out specifically in the thread, yeah. The Wumbo
channels. The cost is a lot cheaper it costs a lot more if you have 5-1 Bitcoin channels than if you have 1-5 Bitcoin channel.
Yeah. And I guess the effect of the attack is larger. On Wumbo channels than
right.
smaller
if you
channels.
Can hit like yeah. a mass you hit like a massive channel between Bitrefill and Bitfinex, and you can cause all sorts of issues if on the network as a whole. Yes. Rather than if there's like a bunch of little channels, they're going to all different places.
So if you're opening up Wumbo channels, maybe do it privately with people that you trust. This has been making the rounds. Iranian power plants, plan to sell electricity to Bitcoin miners. It says crypto miners, but I imagine
that's like mostly Bitcoin miners.
Yeah, predominantly mining Bitcoin. So thermal power plant holding company, which owns and operates a bunch of plants across Iran, said Bitcoin miners are now able to buy electricity from three of its power stations. And this is according to the Tehran Times in this is being doubly reported by Patty Baker at CoinDesk. So it'll be interesting to see what the price per kilowatt hour that's being offered to these miners, whether or not they have to register with the government, which I assume they will have to if they don't already. And
they do.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought was interesting with this article is that, and there's like no way for us to easily verify it, the Iranians know better than us, and you have to kind of take their word for it. Their share of Bitcoin mining output is 4% now, which seems like way higher than most people I think would expect.
No, I think that's been pretty well.
They said it's double. Percentage is double from September 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
So they went from 2 to 4, which is a pretty big jump.
Yeah, and with this, I mean the power plants that are being made available to Bitcoin miners have an available capacity of 5,485 megawatts, which is pretty considerable. That would be a huge chunk of the hash rate today if they were to consume all that with Bitcoin mining. We'll see what percentage of that total available megawatt hours gets consumed by Bitcoin miners. But yeah, be on the lookout for that. And that actually, something that's not on the list, and I have not gone into detail yet. I have not read yet. I haven't had time today. But Cambridge, what's the full name of this? The Cambridge Judge Business School. They released their annual report about a bunch of data in the Bitcoin world, their third global crypto asset benchmark report. Shout out to Apolline Blandin, Dr. Gina Peters, Yu Wu, I got to hit accept cookies here, Thomas Esserman, Anton Deck, Sean Taylor, and Damash Nojiki. I have not read the report, but I've seen a lot of people tweeting about it. And they're saying, according to them, again, I had to dive in, I saw Nick Carter tweeting about this, 39% of Bitcoin mining is renewable energy, is being sourced by renewable or powered by renewable energy. And that's down considerably from what CoinShares estimated only a couple of years ago. On top of that, I believe they increased their estimate of total Bitcoin holders in the world to 101 million people. And I believe it was something like 39 million people last year. So that, if true, is a significant increase in Bitcoin holders around the world.
Who's reporting this?
The Cambridge Judge, University of Cambridge.
100 million seems really high, right?
I don't know, man. That's why, let me find Nick's tweet here, because that's where I'm pulling. Again, I had to read the report. I haven't had time to dive into it.
And the renewable energy is worse now. The less renewables are being used percentage-wise, right?
Yes, I believe so.
You think that's partially because of flare gas?
No, I don't think the flared gas
because mining historically,
here,
it's the hydro. Is the main power source, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's been getting priced out in recent years. It's been getting more expensive in China. Again, I got to jump into the report. I just want to make you freaks aware of it. Maybe we'll dive into it in more detail yesterday. But yeah, Nick tweeted out, they estimate the number of crypto asset users worldwide is at 101 million, up from 35 million in 2018. So not from
crypto.
Last year. Crypto asset.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes more sense to me.
Why would that make more sense? Like, don't you think people would
have... You think there's people that own shitcoins and not Bitcoin?
No. Do you?
What about, like, security tokens and shit?
Is that... how many security tokens are there?
I don't know. There might be people that just own, like, Tether.
That makes sense, yeah. That makes sense.
There's probably at least some people that only hold ETH. They're probably a strong minority, but there's this new breed of like really crazy ETH heads that are only ETH.
God bless
the
you.
The OG shitcoiners always held the majority of their funds in Bitcoin.
Yes. And good luck if you're holding a majority of your funds in Ethereum. Ooh, we didn't have that on the list. What'd you think of the few controversy? Did you follow that at all?
My guess is like 30 to 50 million Bitcoiners. And most of them, you know, if you go back to the Clark Moody episode, they aren't real Bitcoiners because they're not controlling their own keys.
They're not real Bitcoiners because they don't eat meat, a lot of them.
They're not real Bitcoiners because they're not using their own node.
Yeah.
The few stuff is fuck them, right?
I think it's just hilarious, the sanctimonious backpedaling. It was just a joke, and so... If it was just a joke, I posit, what would you have done if those screenshots weren't leaked?
Would. So explain it to the freaks, because you know, if they're a smart freak, they're not aware of any of this.
Yeah, so DeFi Land had a bit of a controversy this week. Some screenshots leaked from a personal chat of 50 people, and in the chat room of 50 people, they were conspiring to launch a DeFi token known as Few.
It was like 50 like semi-prominent Twitter ETH Twitterati, you know, yeah. Like
yes. And so they were planning on spinning this token up, distributing supply amongst each other, launching it on Uniswap, I imagine, getting it launched on Uniswap, having it trade.
Pre-mining.
Pre-mining and dumping. Screenshots leaked of the conversation in which some of the quote-unquote influencers were talking about dumping on retail or people who will come to this token after them and
Literally said, like, don't invite too many people. We need people to dump on.
Yes, exactly. And even alluding to previous insider trading action with other tokens. And so the screenshots leaked, a lot of drama on Twitter, and the people involved came out and said, oh, it was all a joke. It was all a joke. But again, I posit, if it was, were all a joke and those screenshots, what would happen if those screenshots were never leaked? Would Few token be floating right now? Would you have made money from it? I would imagine so.
I mean, one of the people involved wrote like a 10 tweet thread, mea culpa, like apologizing about it. So didn't sound like much of a joke there.
Right.
You know, I think we've talked about it on this pod a bunch of times. Like reputation's a long game. And especially in this space, if you lose it, like, there should be no forgiveness. Like, you lose that for good. And in particular, in the world of illiquid shit tokens, there's a lot of room to be unethical and make a lot of money. You can make a lot of fucking money. And people have in the past. Many people have.
People are
way
right now.
It's easier to make money that way than trying making it ethically. So, you know, if you think that's wrong, like, you need to keep calling them out, because yes. Especially in the bull runs, it gets fucking horrible. Like, this
egregious.
Is
yeah.
This is not the first time something like this has happened. This is like basically the story of shitcoins. This is the history of shitcoin's existence.
You can go back to BitcoinTalk.org. Go through. It's crazy how the evolution of these shitcoin launches, pre-mines, has evolved. Because remember, it was like back in the day, it was like proof of work launch or nothing. And then,
well, look at, you know, if you want to be really provocative about it, Few is just a more illiquid, less successful version of ETH. ETH was like, what, they had like their 20 people, you know, maybe they weren't in a chat room, they were like in a bar in like outside of Bitcoin Miami. But like that, like that's it's the same idea. It's like, let's we'll take the full pre-mine. We can sell some to the public, and then we'll fucking pump the shit out of this thing. World computer.
It's going to version 2.0. Maybe they're already talking about 3.0. But hey, that narrative is always going to be that. There's always a new narrative carrot on a stick that you guys can follow. DeFi is the carrot narrative, and in this case, particularly, it seems that DeFi is a bunch of assholes just trying to screw retail, which is what I've assumed it has been up to this point. Actually have an episode dropping tomorrow. Look out for it with Matthew Black from Atomic Loans, soon to be Atomic Finance. They're moving off Ethereum, and he talked about the stress that comes with building on Ethereum, and then the allure. Like, they were getting pressured to spin up a token. He just consciously couldn't do it, and so I think it's a very interesting perspective on the state of Ethereum, the intentions of that project, and the tokens being spun up on top of it, particularly. Very smart kid, is 22, whipper smart. Fucking, I'm very bullish on the use, Matt. Very bullish on the use.
Awesome. Looking forward to giving it a listen. I'm bullish on the idea of. So what are they, like, born again Bitcoiners?
They've always been Bitcoiners, but they wanted to build a non-custodial.
No, but the idea that, like, if someone has a project built on Ethereum and then they decide to leave Ethereum and then they come on Tales from the Crypt.
Yes.
Like I would like if that became a stereotype.
If you're out there and you're thinking about it, our lines are open. No, and this like, so this is another thing, like Bitcoin Twitter or crypto Twitter, I guess. It's not really focused on Bitcoin Twitter. The traders, they'll like, they'll make fun of you for being poor and yell at you for not making money. But at the end of the day, they don't care about any of this shit. They only care about is making money. They're not going to hold wifey or tendies for the next 30 years, where I can say pretty confidently that most Bitcoiners are in this for the longer term. And
yeah, but no one is admitting. No, there's, I mean, I don't think you think there's like a, there might be like some small, tiny subsect that thinks Yiffy or whatever is going to last 30 years. But I think at least the overwhelming majority of people that are involved there know it's bullshit, right? Like they know, yes. It's not like 5 years, more than 5 years.
It's not more than like 5 months usually.
Yeah. I was being conservative.
Yeah. Be aware. Signal over noise. Bringing it to you here at Tales
Stay
from the
Crypt. Stay humble, stack sats.
That is true. It's
the ultimate TLDR.
Yes. Good friends at Hashrate. Hashrate, HASHR8.com, put out a blog this week about the internal struggles of Bitmain. They particularly put it on a timeline. So John Lee Quigley from Hashrate did a very comprehensive timeline of the Bitmain saga. It's been some of the juiciest drama in the Bitcoin world to date. I've said on this podcast many times that I believe Bitmain will go down as the Icarus story of early Bitcoin. They had a lot of potential to dominate the Bitcoin mining market in particular, and they squandered it in a pretty grandiose way. Is there anything on this timeline that stuck out to you, Matt?
No, it's just a really good, well-done timeline. So, fuck Bitmain. Very interesting story, and if you weren't here for it, you should go check out the timeline, because he goes all the way back
to 2013. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like to me, like I mean 2017, they were the juggernaut in the room, man. They were the juggernaut. They went balls to the wall. And you know, it was a successful strategy for them for a while, but it didn't work out. And most important, I mean, from my perspective, the big thing was the Bitcoin Cash bet. And it was just almost like they went with the gamble every single time, and then when they needed to commit to Bitcoin Cash and like go Bitcoin Cash over the real Bitcoin, they just bitched out, and then that was the end of that.
Yeah, and
the writing was on the wall at that point on.
You know what? Good riddance. Good riddance.
Amen.
Amp lead alone should be enough to piss people off, the fact that they had a backdoor that could shut down their miners remotely if they wanted to. Whether or not that was exploited, I don't think that ever...
It wasn't.
Has been, yeah.
Or at least no one even accused them of exploiting it, so...
Yeah. But then there's arguments they held up SegWit because of ASIC boosts, covert ASIC boosts specifically. So
they definitely were mining on their own chips before they were shipping them out.
Yeah, that as well.
Quality control testing.
So good riddance. We'll do software update dive right here in the middle of this just to get it over with. BISC version 1.3.9 has been released, and I know BISC has made it a point to make Marty friendly release notes. So here they are. This release brings auto confirmation for Monero trades, makes usernames required for revolt payments to reduce disputes based on mediator feedback, and improves connectivity within the network. It also improves reliability. Please update to this version to avoid network issues. That's what they're asking. Thank you for the Marty-friendly release notes there. Blue Wallet version 5.5.9 has been released. Bunch of fixes in there. Not going to read every release note of all these updates. Somebody actually...
the big thing for Blue Wallet was the UI around fees is much better.
Yeah. This update we should talk about because actually a freak reached out to me in DMs. I don't know if he reached out to you as well. Or actually, no, I got an email about this over the weekend. A response to the SAT standard. Tails version 4.11 is out. And apparently there's some important updates in this Tales. The tour has been updated. Thunderbird's been updated. And I believe they did something with Electrum as well. Let me pull up
the email. They brought Electrum up so that, I think it was Trezor. But they brought it up to the most recent Electrum release, which is a big deal. Let me see if I have it here.
Let me find this email to make sure I didn't miss anything.
But it was definitely... Yeah, the Trezor Model T is supported again on Electrum.
Okay.
It was an Electrum update. The last Tales brought Electrum up to V4.0.2. It was Trezor's Python driver. So that you don't have to separately install the driver, you can just like boot up Tails and plug in the Trezor.
Yes, that is
which is fucking key. Like you don't want like the whole beauty of Tails is that it's like all built in and like ready to go. Like you don't want to have to, and like every time it's amnesiac, so it loses all of its settings when you pull the drive out of it. Yeah. So you don't want to have to reinstall the driver every time. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, here's the message from the freak before version 4.11. There were several steps a privacy freak had to make to make the setup work. As of 4.11, all support is built in and asterisks just works. Tails is hugely resistant to malware, hacking, tracking, etc., as I'm sure you're aware, and this makes it a natural place to securely access your wallet coupled with the secure storage of the Trezor.
Yeah, we love Tails here, and it's got Electrum built in. Yes. And everything defaults through Tor.
Yes.
Even though now I am purely a Spectre maximalist.
Ooh.
And I'm fucking loving the Bitcoin Core plus Spectre combination.
Should we just jump to the smart card support for Spectre? This looks
well,
so cool.
Well, we have the next software update is Spectre, right?
It's Nix Bitcoin is the next one.
Oh, there you go. Well, we got Nix Bitcoin has been updated.
Version 0.0.17.
The big thing for that is that they made being a joint market maker much easier, which is when you run joint market server with constant liquidity and you're able to make fees off of that by providing liquidity. So that's really good to see. I mean, they're joining Raspi Blitz and trying to make that process easier for people. And the way Raspi Blitz does it with Join Inbox is fucking fantastic. I haven't tried it with Nix Bitcoin yet, but it's fantastic to see. Then Spectre V0.8.0 has been released. And I guess they made some changes with the Prune node. They made some changes with how the UI is displaying. The UI is more mobile friendly. The QR codes can be resized. There's this new wallet setup wizard when you're setting up just a single sig wallet with like Cold Card or Ledger or Trezor or something, or their do your own hardware wallet, where it like brings you through the wizard to make it as like easy as possible. And this is what I'm really bullish on. Like, I feel like we're getting to the point where it's going to be almost as easy, if not easier, to have Spectre installed, have Bitcoin Core installed, even Prune mode, fine, and then just use your hardware wallet with that instead of using Ledger Live or using, you know, wallet.trezor.io and leaking your addresses to their central server. So that's fucking huge.
Shout out to the Spectre team. Looking at those release notes right now, Ben Kaufman, Stepan Snigarev, and K9ERT. And Michael Flaxman's in there as well, really contributing. And Pulp Cattle and Moritz. Dennis Raymond's in there. Shout out to all these people. Simone working on Spectre. It is really cool. And again, I was alluding to it earlier, mentioned it earlier, right before Matt described the latest update. The smart card implementation looks really cool. Is that so? What am I looking at there? I just seen the video and I don't completely understand it.
So Spectre is two parts. We have Spectre, the software application that you run on your computer alongside Bitcoin Core, and that allows that provides an interface between Bitcoin Core and your hardware wallets, where it gives you coin control labeling and all this great stuff that you'd want there. And then we have their own do-it-yourself hardware wallet that they're calling Spectre. And that costs about $100. It comes with all off-the-shelf parts and it's completely open source. So this wallet doesn't have a secure element though, right? So the idea is because it doesn't have a secure element, it doesn't remember any of your private keys. It's just as soon as it gets powered off, it's supposed to completely wipe. That's obviously not foolproof though, so it's actually really useful in a multi-sig setup where you have like a cold card, a Trezor and this Spectre, or a cold card and a Ledger and the Spectre. Like you can use it as one of the keys, and you have the benefit of off-the-shelf parts and completely open source. With this, you can keep the keys on a smart card that you insert in the backside of the device.
Where do you get these smart cards? It looks like a debit card. Like, how do you get these? Are these just freely available?
I think you either insert or tap. It might be RFID. I'm not sure. Because he kind of puts it on the behind, right?
Yeah, it looks RFID-ish.
But he says insert on the tweet, right?
Yes.
Which is confusing.
Yeah.
But either way, like, I think you can just buy the smart cards at like an electronics store or online.
Yeah.
And you can reprogram them. Like, this is what like they use... I mean, if it's the RFID version, it's like what they use for hotel keys.
Yeah.
Maybe like slightly more secured up than like a hotel key. But like, are those thicker like RFID badges you see like when you're like entering an office building?
Yeah, but so the smart card, each smart card is associated with a different private key, correct?
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's like your seed is on the smart card.
Yeah. But to sign it, you need the Spectre hardware.
Well, you can mix it with a passphrase that you enter on the device, right?
Yeah,
so you scan the smart card and then you enter the passphrase on the device, and then you can sign. And if it's just one key of multiple keys, then you also have that advantage, right? Because then you're signing with that do-it-yourself device, and then you also still need to sign with the cold card or something.
Yeah, pretty dope. Shout out to the Spectre team. You guys are putting out some dope software and hardware, where you're allowing people to pick hardware off the shelf and build some pretty dope tools.
I'm super bullish on it. I mean, I actually, it's funny, right? But like I think they should at least release a kit. If not just a pre-built, they can release a pre-built version too. I know CryptoCloaks, they're working in partnership with CryptoCloaks, who's going to release like a case for it as well. So you can make it more of a, I mean, like, the question here, right, is, like, I love the team. I love that it's completely open source. I think it's a fucking game changer of a product, both sides, on both the software and this do-it-yourself hardware. The real concern is, like, how can they monetize and make this a sustainable thing so we get updates so it's, you know, it stays top of class, you know, if like, people are storing a lot of money on it. So we'll see where they go with this. It looks like right now their goal is maybe like try and get the enterprise side to fund some of it, or at least small businesses maybe that are looking for like a non-custodial way of storing funds, but while still having tech support.
Hey, grant issuers out there that may be listening to this, give Spectre a look. Give the team at Spectre a look. Again, they're putting out some dope stuff. Speaking of dope stuff, Samurai announced a couple hours ago the release of Dojo 1.8.0, and the tweet that came with that announced that improvements that should result in better performance on low spec devices updated to Bitcoin Core version 0.20.1. They consolidated three previous API endpoints into one and totally revamped the Dojo maintenance tool UI. And a couple of comments I saw in the replies to that tweet, one from Bitcoin Q&A, looks like the need for rescanning XPubs using Dojo maintenance tool is unnecessary now, which is huge, because that could be a cause for panic for some people who don't realize when you recover a wallet or when you open a wallet and it's pulling block headers, if it uses a prune node or whatever, it may look like there's no UTXOs in your wallet, but you just have to rescan it. And if you have to do that manually, it can cause a panic. So if they're doing that automatically, yeah, now,
it'll show zero balance.
Yeah, yeah.
And people get scared like fucking hell.
Yeah.
Naturally, you know. Take a deep breath.
Rescan your wallet. If you ever see the zero,
it looks
there.
Like this is going to go a long way to solving that particular issue, and just like make that whole process easier. And this is also very useful for the Uncle Jims of the world, because when you add someone onto your, like if someone is using your dojo, then you have to be tracking their XPub as well. So to make that process easier is welcome.
Yes. So shout out to the Samurai team for getting that out there.
The other thing in Samurai Land that isn't quite out, but I've been part of the group testing it, is they already have these two-person coin joins. They're calling them Stonewall Times 2, where you have two people, they do the coin joins, and they have Stowaway, where if I pay you, then we do a coin join together, so like a pay join between the two of us. And right now that uses a QR code for passing the messages, QR code or copy and paste. So you can either like copy and paste it into like a secure messaging app, like a Signal or something, or a Wire, or you can scan QR codes if you're standing next to each other. Well, they came up with a messaging layer for Tor that is drop-in and app-agnostic and coin-agnostic. So it doesn't know that Bitcoin is involved. It doesn't know. It's not Samurai-specific. It's just a messaging layer for Tor that allows two people to use Tor to communicate with each other, two devices. In their implementation, they're using PayNims to communicate with each other because they already have PayNims to pay each other. But it isn't necessary. And the idea here is that within just a couple clicks through Tor, with not much user interaction, you'll be able to do a two-person coin join, whether that's that pay join model or whether it's just a basically a mini coin join round where you have two people do it. And I think that's fucking huge, like especially if we could get that kind of any kind of cross-app support. It just starts killing heuristics. And one of the nice things here is because there's no coordinator involved. The coordinator is not getting a fee, and you're not you're not coin joining with strangers. So the negative is you don't have to worry about any kind of Sybil attack. The positive is you don't have to worry about any kind of Sybil attacks because you're not coin joining with strangers. The negative is that you do have to trust the person you're coin joining with because they obviously know which transaction is yours and which transaction is theirs. But it could be extremely powerful at any kind of scale because it just completely breaks the heuristic of both inputs on the input side are owned by the same person.
Hell yeah. Fuck yeah.
I'm really bullish on that. That should come out pretty soon.
So you're beta testing that?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking cool.
And are you doing that on the mobile app or are you using like a...
No, it's all... They have like a testing mobile app.
Okay, sweet.
It'll just be like in the mobile app. And the beauty is like every spend in Samurai after you do Whirlpool is a simulated two-person coin join. So it looks like it's a two-person coin join, but it's just one person doing it. So if we have more of these people doing real two-person coin joins, then it completely breaks the heuristic. You don't know which one is a one person and which one's a two person. They look the same. So we don't even need that many people doing the two person. If we have 3,000 people, 4,000 people doing the two person, like maybe that's enough to like completely break the heuristic.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the day when some government agency attempts to use one of these heuristics to prove that somebody committed what they deem to be a crime, and it comes out that they were completely wrong, and the owner of one of the inputs was somebody completely different than they expected. Is that what it will take to prove that these heuristics are?
I mean, see, that's the problem with like heuristic breaking. Because like tracking Bitcoin is a probability game. So by breaking the heuristics, you reduce the probabilities, you reduce the likelihood that Bitcoin can be tracked. You make their guesses more guesses rather than educated. But the issue is like governments have thrown plenty of people in jail for things they didn't do in the past. You know, it's taken, it's, you know, the people have been put in jail for murdering someone for life, and like 25 years later, like, there's DNA evidence that absconds them and they get off. Like
Kamala Harris.
Yeah, like, I prefer if, like, I don't know, you know, it could, they could throw people in jail for bad heuristics for a while.
Yeah.
Right? Before, like, it and if in some countries, they may never admit that they were wrong.
Yeah.
So.
We'll see. It's an ongoing battle.
It definitely would be interesting to have, like, some of these, like, chain surveillance companies, like, in court. Like trying to make a case that, you know, this is this person, because we haven't really seen that. We haven't. One of the things that's so sketchy about these firms is that everything they do is like behind closed doors. You don't get to see the tools. You don't get to see the analysis. You don't get to see what they're using.
Yeah. And this highlights something you tweeted about today. You quote tweeted, "No bullshit Bitcoin," and making the world aware that the Russian government wants full wallet disclosures, addresses. If you own Bitcoin, own enough Bitcoin in a single address that's worth more than $1,300, the Russian government wants its citizens to report those addresses to the government. And this highlights,
it was a single address. That's what Mr. Hoddle tried to say it was. I don't. I think it's a wallet that's over $1,300. Like, I think if they cluster your wallet, I don't think, like, if you're not reusing, if you're, let's say you're not reusing addresses, so but you buy, like,
wants the crypto users to have to report their digital wallet address, transaction history, and balance if the wallet receives more than 100,000 rubles, around $1,300.
The wallet, not the address.
It says the digital wallet address.
But then it says the wallet.
Well, the wallet address.
I don't know, but the thing is, even if it's just specifically an address, like, that loophole will last, like, what, a year or so, right? And then they'll be like, they'll just see everyone, like, structuring their address is under 1300. Like, they'll have like a bunch of addresses that are 1200, and they'll be like, okay, wallets, full wallets.
Yeah. They're also, right?
The distinction doesn't really matter, because it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. And so anybody who fails to report that is subjected to up to 3 years in prison. And they're also asking OTC dealers, they're obliging them. They're not asking them. They're forcing them to report all transactions involving rubles in Russian IP addresses to the tax authorities. So if you're in Russia, make sure you're using a VPN or Tor. I'm sure many Russians are wise on that already, but just
learn
in case.
Learn about Bitcoin privacy pitfalls and techniques, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one good news here is that it looks like this is a proposed plan. It's not been enacted yet, so maybe it doesn't happen, but I do think this happens in lots of places around the world.
Yeah.
At least over the short term, and then maybe it gets pulled back. But, like, a lot of people will get are in for a surprise.
Yeah. We're delving into the news that makes us mad section. We haven't finished all the good news yet. So we'll mix in the good news and the bad here. 2 points of good news. Square Crypto granted BTC Pay Server with another $100,000 grant. And launches a proper portal for their work, which is squarecrypto.org, so you can follow what they're contributing to there. I believe the BTC Pay grant was the first recurring grant that they've offered to a grant recipient, which is good to see them re-upping that, getting skin in the game. I think we mentioned this last week. I think we have this on the list because of squarecrypto.org. But again, can't be said enough times. BTC Pay Server is one of our favorite projects in the space, doing God's work to contribute to the sovereign nature of Bitcoin and the closed loop Bitcoin economy. And this was really cool to see. Namecheap, actually the DNS provider of TFTC.io, is now accepting Bitcoin via BTC Pay Server.
They were accepting it through BitPay before, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
They were one of the first, but now they haven't dropped BitPay yet, so it's bittersweet. They've just added BTC Pay as an option.
So if you're using Namecheap and paying in Bitcoin, make sure you go out of your way to use the BTC Pay Server option.
I imagine BitPay is short for them because, like, they have to pay fees to BitPay, so why would they continue once they realize that BTC Pay works great?
Yeah, I agree. All right, and back to news that makes us mad. Venezuela government is requiring the use of national mining pools. So if you're a miner in Venezuela, the Maduro regime is attempting to require miners to point their hash at a national mining pool that I believe the Venezuelan government is thinking about spinning up. A few things here. Number one, I would not trust this mining pool. They're definitely going to charge exorbitant fees. Number two, I hope that if you're in Venezuela mining, you're mining off-grid and hopefully using a VPN or any services that you can. I think VPN may slow it down too much, so you got to sort of hide how you're delivering your hash.
You could probably get away with a VPN. You're just going to lose some profitability.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're going to lose profit. Like, if the Venezuelan government is not only KYCing you, but controlling your reward payouts,
it's probably worth that.
Like, you're gonna lose some profitability there too, I would say.
Yeah. I did see. I forget. God, I wish I had the tweet where this. I think it was No Bullshit Bitcoin. Let me pull up the tweet from No Bullshit Bitcoin, because there was a Venezuelan miner that hopped in that thread and said they're not worried particularly. They actually think individual miners within Venezuela are gonna create their own pool.
Why would they create their own pool instead of just using one of the established ones?
That's a good point.
Lower variance.
Let me find this. Give me a second here.
You know, I mean, it comes down to enforcement, right? And they're not going to be able to fully enforce it, but on the bigger operations, they'll be able to enforce it. And they'll make an example out of some people who don't comply. We already know the Venezuelans have seized miners. In the past, if you don't play ball with them. So it's not that much of a surprise, but this should be a concern to people. Another thing I didn't have on the list was the attempted WeChat TikTok ban. And I think when you look at combination of this, the Russian disclosures and the WeChat TikTok ban, you're kind of starting to see what the framework, what the playbook would be to try and attack Bitcoin. It'd be way more effective on some of these shitcoins if you wanted to use it to attack something like ETH. I mean, in the WeChat TikTok executive order from Trump, like, he's explicitly called out, like, using AWS to host WeChat messages and WeChat transactions that were happening. So, like, you hit the servers, you tell people that they need to disclose their addresses, you tell the miners they have to use your mining pool. And then you try enforcement. You know, enforcement is gonna be hit or miss, but you're gonna get some people, and you're gonna scare a large amount of people into complying.
Yes, I go back and forth. I agree with your tweet about it, or your thought of the week last week in the Stat Standard, but I do not like those apps, and I don't think you do either. Yeah, it is an interesting trade-off. Do you allow the spyware within your borders, especially considering they don't reciprocate within their borders? Are you just turning into your enemy at that point if you ban them? It's an interesting debate.
I mean, look, I think we should live in a world where the apps you don't like can't be banned. So
yeah, exactly. I agree with that. Don't download the spyware, people. TikTok's got, like, it was hilarious that if you watch the NFL this week, TikTok's got, like, a huge ad campaign going on right now.
I mean, that's got to be the strategy, right? You got to go for hearts and minds.
Yeah. It's
I mean, it's interesting too, because you also have on the side, you have the Tim Apple fight, where they're trying to, you know, keep their app store restricted so they get the 30% cut. And I don't know if you saw, but, like, Epic Games just got, they were the ones who put their neck out at first, but they just got joined by Proton Mail, Spotify, and a couple other big dogs that are all, like, trying to push for the ability to make their own app store so that they don't have to pay Apple a 30% cut.
Yeah. How much of Apple's revenue does that make up?
A shit ton.
Yeah.
They're trying, you know, it's this whole new idea, like, become a service business rather than a hardware business.
What would Steve Jobs think of this?
I mean, I think he loved his his paywalls and his closed systems. He was a big fan of it.
Right.
He saw the value in it.
Yeah.
It should be an interesting fight, but it definitely does make their platforms more susceptible to these government interventions. I mean, on the WeChat side, it's really interesting that they're going after servers, because this is exactly like the type of playbook that people have theorized with shitcoins before, which is like you go after Infura, right? You go after, you know, there's like four or five providers of Ethereum nodes as a service. Like you go after them and you go after the people that they host with. So you go after Microsoft Azure, you go after AWS. And that's what they're doing with WeChat. But with TikTok, it's much simpler. With TikTok, they just say it's not allowed on the app stores. So with iPhone, you're shit out of luck. You can't get the updates anymore for TikTok. But on Android, at least you could either install your own app store if you want, or you can sideload an APK. So it's a different censorship resistance model because of the way those two companies are handling their app stores, handling their platforms.
Yeah. More freedom on Android. Who would have thunk it? Google.
Yeah. Well, it's always been more open. It's just, you know, run by a surveillance company. So.
Right. All right. Continuing on subjects that make us angry. FinCEN, BuzzFeed. A blog that I usually don't hold in high regard actually put out some good investigative journalism.
Like every once in a while, they hit us with some random investigative journalism piece that's like really top notch.
Yeah, and this is one of them. So the FinCEN files, they did this in conjunction with a bunch of other media companies around the world and the international journalists, something something. They got their hands on. I believe something like 2,100, what are they called? SARs, the, suspicious activity reports that have been sent to FinCEN by the major banks of the world. And these suspicious activity reports basically, are reports in the bank saying, hey, there's people that are doing some suspicious activity, moving large amounts of money, potentially money laundering, or supporting drug dealers, kleptocrats, corrupt regimes around the world. Yet these transactions still get through. The banks deal with these customers, and the suspicious activity reports we're coming to find are basically just a way for these banks to wash their hands clean of any culpability in this. So they send the reports and then they facilitate the transactions anyway. It just highlights the two-tiered justice system that we live under. These large banks that have been screwing over the world for some time now are able to service large drug cartels, again, corrupt regimes and other nefarious activities, while the common man is getting the whole book of the law thrown at him for very minor infractions, especially when you compare them to the amount of fraud that's enabled at this level, which is trillions of dollars over the last 12 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think it highlights a bunch of things that are really interesting that we've discussed on this pod.
One coin got called out.
A lot, which is, yeah, one coin was in it. Which is, well, first of all, is that these big bureaucracies are inefficient and they lack accountability. So they end up being very ineffective. They each like just create plausible deniability for themselves. So it's like there's no one for it to actually fall on. The second thing is that the overwhelming majority of money laundering is happening in traditional finance systems. They're not happening in Bitcoin. The third thing is that the collection of this information in KYC is extremely dangerous. If FinCEN cannot protect this information, which they cannot, clearly, then they should not collect it. And then the fourth thing is absolutely bullshit because they're letting the overwhelming majority of money laundering go through while they're putting their citizens at risk by forcing the collection of the information. And in a lot of times, they're putting businesses out of business because of the overbearing regulations that prevent them being competitive in America versus in other countries.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point I was just about to bring up. Like, it's so ironic the fact that the solutions to these problems of money laundering and facilitating fraud on a scale that make many of the criminals and throughout history blush, the solutions to these problems basically consolidate more power into the people that are facilitating this. And so yes, they make more regulation. Like Matt said, it makes it burdensome for smaller businesses to comply. So they fall out of favor. And as we've seen throughout history, these nefarious actors don't care about laws. They don't care about laws. They're breaking the law and they know it. And to think that they're not going to continue doing that because you make more regulations is just asinine. Where there's a will, there's a way. And as we've seen throughout history, these banks have a price point at which they will facilitate this crime. And to think it'll be any different moving forward because of these leaks is naive, to say the least.
I'm into that.
Yeah. Screw FATFA. And a lot of this has to do with appeasing FATFA, a supranational, unelected regulatory body that you didn't vote for, and they control the way we send money around the world. Fuck FATFA.
It's just been like a fucking crazy week for confirming my biases. Just like, and like in the worst ways ever. It's like, they're like the worst told you so's to be happening.
Right.
But, It has been a crazy week in regard to that.
Yeah. I threw something at the end of the list. I don't know if you saw that. I just want to mention that. But first, before we get to that, the DOJ announced Tuesday of this week, September 22nd, the international law enforcement operation targeting opioid traffickers on the darknet has resulted in over 170 arrests worldwide and the seizure of weapons, drugs, and over $6.5 million. So,
worth of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies.
Yes. So they're calling this operation.
And cash, I guess. Some cash.
Let me see. Let me type in crypto. It's a cryptocurrency. 11 pounds of methamphetamine. Allegedly accepted payment in cryptocurrency, primarily Bitcoin.
Over $6.5 million in both cash and virtual currencies.
Yeah.
500 kilos of drugs.
One person. What darknet was it?
170 people. It was multiple darknets.
Yeah.
Did you see? Disruptor, it was the name of the operation. They always come up with clever names.
Saboteur. Sabotor. Operation Saboteur.
Oh, what is Disruptor? Oh. They have two names there. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Disruptor builds on the success.
Oh, last year's was Saboteur, and this year's was Disruptor. Such clever names.
Hey, they're getting creative. They have some creative minds in the Department of Justice.
Yeah, but anyway, this is... Well,
and so, I read about the FinCEN leaks and the Bent. I believe it was Monday. Might have been Tuesday. Today is Thursday. But yeah, like I said, if you haven't read that, I said in that issue, like, is this drug war really worth it? Like, why are we making criminals out of these people? Like, again, the FinCEN leaks are highlighting the fact that it's becoming extremely hard to focus on the crimes that are worth focusing on. Like, all these regulations and wars on abstract objects like drugs, and the war on drugs, they just create a bunch of criminals that they really should start considering, like, do we want to create the headache around this stuff and just make a bunch of people criminals for stuff that many people, myself included, would argue is like, hey, if you want to do that, if you're an individual of free will and you want to engage in those activities, you should be able to. It would probably reduce crime. It would reduce the draw to do that stuff, because when you make things illegal, it makes people with certain mindsets want to do it more. If it's made legal or decriminalized, at least you make it more probable that people will create services that service addicts in better ways and make it publicly acceptable to admit that you have a problem and solve that problem. It's just really infuriating. I just went on a weird rant there, but whatever.
One interesting take was our boy Dark.Fail said on Twitter, he's like, this isn't the war on drugs. This is the war on privacy. which I thought was very interesting.
Disruptor, saboteur.
Yeah, like they're going after these private marketplaces, right? And these message boards and these private communities, and they want to make a point. They don't want people working outside of the system. The other thing that I think is important here is that a lot of people, myself included, think it's very unlikely for countries, and especially in this current geopolitical climate, to come together, work together for a common goal. And a lot of times that is in discussion of Bitcoin and state threats of Bitcoin, on Bitcoin and that threat model. It turns out, that if they're sufficiently motivated in something they don't like, they can work together, and this operation specifically was like a ton of European countries, US and Canada, that they all worked together and they hit people all in these different countries at the same time so they wouldn't get spooked.
Yeah, they'll come together to inhibit privacy and sovereignty of individuals. They don't want you to be free freaks. They hate you. They all fucking hate you. But we're going to end on a good note, unless you have anything to add to that, Matt.
I saw what you added, but we actually have two things left.
What's the other thing?
Bitcoin Q&A released his Whirlpool fee calculator at whirlpoolfees.com.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't see that on the list. Is that on the list?
I put it in at the end. And he has a portal that just, lists all of his great guides and all the different content he's done, and that's getbitcoin.help. So it's whirlpoolfees.com is the Whirlpool fee calculator. And it's really nice because it includes the mining fees, which is important if I'm right about mining fees going up, that you're able to get a clear calculation there. And his portal for all of his content is getbitcoin.help.
Yes. Shout out to Bitcoin Q&A, putting out incredible content, trying to help people who are trying to help themselves via Bitcoin. So go check that out. And then lastly, what I add to the list is, I just thought this was pretty cool. Luke Childs, teased it, Umbrel wallet support. They're supporting a bunch of different wallets, Wasabi, Blue Wallet. Let me pull up the tweet.
And Blue Wallet, Green Wallet, Electrum. Yeah, I think that was it.
Phoenix Wallet.
For now. Oh, Phoenix. Yeah. A lot of them are just Electrum Wallet. But, yeah. Like Electrum Wallet backend. But what's cool about this is that it's once again, it's like Umbrel, like making the UX very nice, And for a lot of these wallets right now, you're still going to have to copy and paste the string in, but they're providing the QR code. So those devs of those wallets can make it so you can just scan the QR code. And that's what we want. We want to be able to just easily connect your node through Tor with your wallet by scanning the QR code. That's fucking beautiful.
Yes.
Make that the standard.
Shout out to the Umbrel team. Really incredible UX. And yeah, go check this out. We'll link to the demo, I guess you can say, the GIF that shows how it works. It's really sleek.
Yeah. To be clear here, Mynode and Noddle and Raspberry Blitz, they have this same capability. What's really cool here is that it's all in the same spot. The UX is nice. It shows the QR code. It's not just a copy string.
Yes.
But I love it. I'm a huge fan.
Shout out to you guys. You have anything else we got to riff on here before we wrap up? I still have to write the bent. I haven't had time to write the bent yet today.
That's the beauty of the bent, is that they never know what time they're going to get it.
You're getting a late one today, freaks.
It's always 8 a.m. somewhere, freaks.
Yeah, that's actually the mentality I've adopted. That's the beauty of having a global audience. It is crazy. Somebody asked me that the other day, do you have a global audience? I was like, it seems so. So shout out to you, freaks.
When you send it, you should look up where it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and you should just start off your bed like "Good morning, Nicaragua." Or
good
whatever.
Morning, Australia.
Yeah. Good morning, Hawaii.
Yeah.
No, I mean, life's good. I love you, freaks. I miss you, Marty. Go on a road trip. Enjoy your country.
I co-sign that. Yeah, no, again, just want to reiterate, love to you guys tune in and join us every week for this. We love doing it. We love you. If you're liking it, tell your friends. Give us
Stay
a review.
Humble, stack sats.
Give us a review. Share. Be good to your family.
Subscribe.
Engage. Tiki. Peace and love.